Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast, a podcast designed to help, support, and educate men as they go through their own fertility struggles. I'm Kieran.
And I'm Sean. And we'll do that by sharing our stories of what we went through, as well as having guests share their knowledge and experience. Right, let's get into today's episode.
Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast. Today we are joined by a good friend of mine, Tony Suckling, aka The Hopeful Father. How are you, buddy?
Well, good, thank you. It's been a long time coming, but really excited to be here. So thank you, guys, for inviting me on.
Oh, it's our pleasure, Tony. Thanks for coming.
Well, Sean just said it. It's a pleasure. I've been privileged enough to spend quite a bit of time with you, and I'm sure we'll go into that. But today, you know, we want to hear from you and about, you know, your journey, your story. You know, what you've learned about yourself, what you've learned about the world as you've gone through it. So let's start right at the beginning, buddy. Tell us about, you know, how it all started.
So the fertility journey probably started with us back in 2012 when me and my wife, beautiful wife, got married. Obviously, like every young couple, we just think that kids are going to come naturally. So unfortunately, that wasn't the case. Kind of spent a few years trying, as anybody normally would. It was probably just after 3 years that we kind of thought, hold on, we've had 3 years, which again, you know, you're young, you're going out, you're having fun, just nothing was going on, nothing was happening. So we thought, okay, it's been 3 years, we'll go and see the doctor. Did a couple of basic tests, but nothing strenuous, at the time. And then she basically sort of told me I've got a low sperm count, which, you know, obviously just one of the basic tests, not much more, but it was just a simple go off, eat a little bit better, it'll get better, and off you go. So you sort of trot off, think, happy days, we'll all be good. But again, after another year, I think it was, nothing. So we sort of had another test in 2016, hardly any better. And that was kind of when we really got into the world of fertility. And what was going to happen, or not going to happen, as the case was. But yes, it was 2017 when we started deep in the depths of going for fertility clinics and all that sort of stuff. But it was that first consultation with an actual fertility clinic, which basically said, you're not going to be able to have kids naturally, which, yeah, it was a big kick to me. It completely takes your legs off, and you just think, geez, this is not good. How is this real? How has this happened to us? You think you're the only one in the world. It just breaks your whole world apart. So that was, it was 2017. So we sort of started down the dark warren hole of what do we do here? So you've literally got the world of going to the fertility clinic, them sort of advising you. But at this point in time, they hadn't actually looked at me. And it was me who had the problem. But we didn't know that. They seemed to just say, let's just throw money at the problem. We'll just do a round of IVF or a round of ICSI and you'll get pregnant. So you just think, amazing, brilliant. Let's just do that. And unfortunately, we lost two embryos on our first transfer, which was gutting. And that was my deepest point, because you suddenly then actually do realize that there's no golden ticket. You know, there's no, you can't just throw money at the problem and end up like this IVF clinic was telling us, that you're going to come out with a baby 9 months later. And that was, that was my real low point in my personal journey. That was in 2017. And I was an absolute bitch at that point. That was awful. That was kind of the road that we started upon. And I know I've spoken to both of you guys before about it, but yeah, that was really tough. That was really tough. And back then there was no help for any of us back in sort of 2015, 2016, 2017. I locked myself away, didn't talk to anybody, didn't tell my best friend, my family, nobody. And that was a really dark, dark place in my life. But I just kind of thought to myself, look, we need to move forward. You know, I should be able to give my wife what, you know, she should naturally be able to have. So we sort of moved on. Took a bit of a head turn around it. And the year after, we went forward and tried again. We were kind of in the right mindset. It took a bit of time, but went back onto it. Kind of halfway through the second cycle in 2018, we found two really lovely people who I think you've spoken to, Melanie Brown and Jonathan Ramsey. But we found them a little bit too late through that cycle. And it was kind of like, do we stay with, you know, do we start again? Or do we just carry on? Because we were literally halfway through. And unfortunately, we found them a little bit too late. We lost another two embryos on that cycle. But at that point, the clinic were very much, hey, let's try again. So they still hadn't tested me at this point, let's be honest, at all. So again, I'd had a basic sperm test. That was it, nothing more. And, you know, this is what we all sort of get a bit angry about nowadays, is that there's so much more to know. But we were offered no counselling, nothing through this whole process. You know, and that's a gutter. But Melanie and Jonathan kind of helped us through. And they both recommended, well, hey, you know, you need to actually do all these fleet of tests. You need to be on these supplements, that sort of stuff. So again, it was a really nice sort of light at the end of the tunnel. We thought we'd actually finally found the right people. And that was amazing. And literally after their help, 9 months later, we became pregnant naturally, which was like, wow, you know, this could happen naturally. It's just unreal, you know, to think that after all of that pain you'd been through, it could happen naturally. Unfortunately, my wife had a miscarriage after 7 weeks, but we'd never been in that place before. You know, and that was beautiful. But yeah, we lost the little one again. So that was 2019. We're counting the years now. And at the end of 2019, we decided to have a look elsewhere for another clinic outside of London. Happened to be in Spain, and we had a cycle over there, and it was like night and day. The help that we got over there. It was just amazing. It really was. You felt like one of the family, and it was beautiful. So we ended up going over there, doing most of it. Unfortunately, that was February 2020, just before COVID-19 hit. So we left our embryos in Madrid, which was the epicenter of COVID. We were meant to go out there in the second week of March. Obviously, everything was locked down. And I call her, always have called her. We left her out there all throughout COVID for various reasons, this, that, and the other. You had to have one jab to fly, two jabs to fly, this, that, and the other. And we couldn't go and pick her up until April last year. And yeah, now we have a beautiful daughter. So yeah, it's all wound up lovely in the end, but I've skimmed over that journey probably so much, but you know, we are very grateful to be where we are. You know, it's worked out in the end for us, and we'll be forever grateful to everybody who's helped, but there's been pain, heartache and joy through it all. But that's a quick summary. Sorry. Like I said, I've probably skimmed through all of that, but
well, no, that's the thing. We do it all the time, and it's you know, we could sit here for 4 hours and just still skim the surface, because it what you go through, and everyone listening to this will understand the same. It's when you do that, and that you're sharing that retrospectively as well. You know, like imagine trying to explain that when you're living it, and that's why people do find it so hard to do that to people who don't understand. Yeah. And that's why community is so important, and what we're trying to do here, because everyone that listens to that, who's either living it or has lived it will understand just exactly what you're saying. And it goes without saying how much heartache would have been involved in that. And so,
yeah,
I can't thank you enough for sharing that. And I'm so pleased to hear that you had that happy ending. And thank you, Tony. That's there's a lot to unearth now, you know, because there's so much you spoke of there. Like, I know Kieran and I certainly resonate with.
Yeah, real. See, I've known your story for quite a while, haven't I, mate? But even when you talk about it, it still echoes of me the amount of pain that, you know, you really did go through, and that trauma, and that it is a form of suffering, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, it's not just those years that we had to leave her over in Spain. You know, that was, you know, looking back on it now, that was probably kind of the easy bit, if anyway. You know, it was heartbreaking because we couldn't go out there and get her. But, you know, those bits before that were just awful, you know, and that's the bit that really, you know, still hurts, was all the losses before her. You know, and the lack of help we were offered, even from the clinic. I think, Sean, I came to your first get-together down in Hyde Park, you know, and I can't remember, you know, I'm really sorry, Matt, I can't remember what year that was, but I think it was like 2019, something like that.
Or I think it was
early COVID. Or?
It was post-COVID. It was 21. Yeah, so I started sharing my story at the beginning, January 21. And, kind of, like, put it out there, like, leap of faith. But then, like, the amount of guys that were speaking to me, I was like, I need to do more. I need to do more. But it was that weird time where I remember very specifically the time when
that
I did
it.
I think it was like July 21, because pubs were starting to reopen. You were allowed 6 people. But I had no idea how many people would or wouldn't turn up. I didn't know if I was going to be there on my own or if like 30 blokes would turn up. So I was like, well, I can't just do it in a pub, because then if there's more than 6, you know, it was really strict at the time as well. And that's not to mention as well that there'll be people very much going through fertility treatment who wouldn't want to be in that environment because of the risk.
Yeah.
Remember the paranoia around? My kids at that point were 3 or 4 months old, and I was, on the tubes and stuff, just so paranoid about being near people because they were so young and vulnerable. And, you know, and like I said, there's people who would have been still needing a top clean bill of health to go to clinics, and you know how much you're riding on that, but then needing that support as well. So that's where I was just like, I remember that day had been pouring down, classic as well, like classic England. So I took a roll of bin bags for everyone to sit on, just sat in a circle. But
turning up and turning up, didn't they? And it's like, wow, you know.
It was that weird thing there, wasn't it, of like, you're not really wanting to out yourself for what you're there for. Are you here for the fertility? Right, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
It was a very strange but great moment. You know, I still speak to pretty much everyone that came to those. So it's a great moment.
It's amazing how something, I mean, we've talked about this before, I'm sure, and how something so fragile can actually bring us together. Like in that awkward moment, just that, are you here for the, it's all right then.
I have it so much at work now. I mean, since I've been so open about it and the newspaper and all that sort of stuff, there'll be people that come into work and I'm standing there having like a breakfast full of nuts, and they give me a funny look. And I give them a funny look. And it's do you want to chat in the corner? And, you know, and it's just like you go into it and they're like, wow, geez. You know, and there's customers that I've known for so long, but we've never talked about that until you just catch something of each other's.
Yeah.
And after you do, it's lovely. It really is. And, you know, to go into it and just to have somebody to talk to it who you just wouldn't expect.
That is so
true. You'd come to see me for something completely different. And then you go in to talk about that. And I even had it like 2 weeks ago, a couple that I've known for so long, and we've never talked about them having kids, not having kids, whatever. And I don't think, to be honest, I'd ever spoken to them about it either. And suddenly it was just sort of like, oh, what are you doing next week? And his wife just opened up and said, oh, we're going to start IVF. And I was like, oh, let me go and grab a cup of tea. I'll be back in a minute. And we were there for an hour, just chatting about it and, you know, people to recommend and things to do, this, that, and the other, and they loved it. You know, and it's put relationship or working relationship, completely different tangent now, which is lovely. Yeah.
It's so true. Like you're saying, like the little intricacies. I know from the way I speak to people, if they've been through similar or are going through it, just by the words they use.
Yeah.
And the respectful nature, where people ask about children or have you got any or are you planning to have any more? You can tell when the way people word it. Because when people haven't been through it, the language they use is that more kind of clumsy, presumptuous language, and that just goes when you know that it's not a given. But yeah, like I said to you before we hit record, is we like these conversations to go where they go, and this is why we do, because that's the nature of it, isn't it? But yeah. I'm really interested to hear. You mentioned how important Mel Brown and Jonathan Ramsey, or as he's affectionately known in the WhatsApp support group, the big dog. What was it that they identified in you that needed a bit of adjustment or tweaking here or there?
I mean, Mel was just certain supplements that I just was low in, and especially sort of like the Mediterranean diet. All the nuts, mainly the sort of the supplements and the nut diet, which I hate nuts, and it has to be the most boring ones. Just doing all of that all the time, which is lovely. And if anybody hasn't been to see Mel, she's like my psychiatrist to me. I love talking to her. She's so lovely. And Jonathan, the same. He has this bedside manner, which I just absolutely love. And obviously, he again was like, well, we need to do these tests. The DNA fragmentation test was a big one for me, which nobody had ever told me about. And obviously, still isn't available, as far as I'm aware, on the NHS. And that was the big tell for me, because what was happening was, things were basically falling apart. That's why nothing was happening. So to have that test, and I think as a guy, to have a marker to start and then to move yourself forward, we all want to win a game at the end of the day, don't we? And I think to have a gauge, have a chart to move forward, to try and move forward, that was a big thing for me. To have that fragmentation test, and then in 3 months' time, give it another go. I've moved on. I've got better. Let's see what I can do in the next 3 months. From that initial consultation after or during our second cycle, to then having a natural pregnancy, that's unreal. We'd been trying for, at that point, 5, 6, 7 years. We'd never even got to that stage. These two new people are on board, and hold on, we're getting a natural pregnancy. And I know exactly the point in time when, I was with my wife and we had a miscarriage, and I hate it. It's nasty, but we'd moved forward. Do you know what I mean? And that's the thing. We were just constantly moving forward. And at that point in time, we were thinking, we can do this. I banged off a load of weight, got fit and all that, that all helped naturally to do that. So yeah.
Did you find a decent PT for that then?
I have now, who turns out I was doing completely the wrong thing by myself. So Kieran's put me on the straight and told me, you were doing it all wrong, mate. Thanks for that. But
I was setting you up for I didn't manage to find a decent one, but then it was Kieran.
He's like, mate, you're doing it all wrong. You need to get the testosterone up. Let's go.
He's a good client. He listens. Mm.
He tries.
It's a realistic. I've got a question for you, really, and it's kind of delving into that. Like, making those lifestyle changes are quite intimidating when you walk into, say, like a professional, as Mel and Jonathan, and they're saying you need to make these changes. I know firsthand how staggered. Especially like Mel, right, builds it in gradually, and so does Jonathan. But how did you find that? Because a lot of people really find that difficult and worry about it a lot. From my own clients, talking them through that, taking one step at a time, like we did with you.
Yeah.
How did you find that whole process? And did you kind of find that you had to change your mentality around that?
I think because I knew it was for the big goal, I just put myself into it. You know, I was literally going to the gym 6-7 times a week, which now I know was the other way and not great. But yeah, we were on the supplements, we were banging down the gym, you know, it was on it. It was difficult, don't get me wrong, but I enjoyed doing it. You know, we found it, I've got a gym literally 5 minutes down the road. I got on really well with the instructors, all the guys there and the girls. I was doing Latin samba. I was doing old school like dance classes just to try and get a bit of cardio in it and stuff as well. I was loving it, really loving it. So, and that's the thing as well, I think because I understood where Mel and Jonathan were coming from. And like I said, Jonathan was just so lovely with it. He was very straight-faced, just tell you like it is, which I love. And like I said, Mel was kind of, I wouldn't say the flip side of that, but as you both know, she's a completely different character.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, it was lovely. You know, I actually wanted to go and see Mel and Jonathan. You know, it didn't scare me. I looked forward to my appointments with them and spending time with them, which, you know, I'd love to go down the pub with either of them or have a coffee now, and I still would. So, yeah. I just went wholeheartedly into it and said to my wife, because we just looked at that, focused on that goal. It's the only way of doing it.
The underlying issue, you've pointed towards the fact that like it was a DNA frag and with specific and like tailored plans. And like you said, that moving forward, managed to start making improvements. With those initial tests that you were having, were there any red flags at all coming back on them?
You mean back from like the initial doctor's ones or after?
The point where you had the frag test, really. Was there anything screaming
It was all a little bit low. Morphology wasn't great. Motility wasn't great. I had a low sperm count. But it was all, you know, from the first few just doctor's appointments that I had, they were like, yeah, don't worry about it. It'll be fine. Just have a little bit more, you know, healthy diet. Go to the gym a little bit. And the same as when we went to the fertility clinics, they were just like, don't worry about it. We'll do ICSI. It'll be fine. Just throw it up, you know, do another cycle. It will be fine. At no point did that fertility clinic look at me at all. Everything was about my wife. And, you know, looking back on it now, it was just like we just wasted two cycles completely. All of the time, the pain, the anguish, the money, all of that was wasted, literally wasted. So you've wasted 3 years of your life for something that was never going to happen because you're on the wrong path and you were not guided properly by a professional body, in my mind. And I know this is just, you know, we've come out of it without the result that we wanted from that clinic, but that's how we feel. You know, and you were offered no help, assistance or anything otherwise, unfortunately. And that may be why, you know, the clinic that we're with now, absolutely polar opposite. You know, the first thing that they wanted to do was the complete suite of tests on me. And I can't remember if we actually even put that forward to them, or whether they said, right, we're doing everything on you, we're doing everything on your wife, and let's start with a new kind of baseline. We didn't have to put that forward.
That's mad, because it seems so commonsensical, doesn't it? From, I know we're all patients and we've been there, but you think, like, you can't see what's going on inside someone. Like, and, you know, you mentioned that the tests all a bit low across the board, but I know you, that, and like from what you said as well, your lifestyle didn't need a massive overhaul. You weren't like living a completely like bad fertility lifestyle, for example. But so, yeah, all of that, those questions, those initial triages should have shown that there could be something else underlying here.
Yeah. I mean, since then, I've had a small varicocele operation, which I had last year. that it was minor. And obviously, we don't know whether that has been having an effect prior or whether that's been onset since. But, you know, from what I can see, it was just kind of over the limit that needed doing. So we've had that sorted just to tick that box, as it were, to sort of move on and see what happens with that.
Mm.
Did you get any, pinpointed to any support from Spain? Is there anything out there?
They offered us straightforward, their normal sort of help from them, which was fine. Even during COVID, when we couldn't get over there, they said, look, anything you need from us, just let us know. So throughout the whole time of waiting, even though they weren't kind of doing anything, if that made sense, they were there for us, and they said, look, if you want anything, if you need anything, just let us know. You know, they just had the little one on ice, and they were just like, look, whenever you want to come back, she's here, so we're here for you. Which, you know, to get that kind of contact, even though we're not dealing with them at that time, was lovely, you know. And that's what I'm saying, it's just completely different.
I remember you talking quite a lot about being in contact with them a lot and not knowing whether you're going, waiting for something to happen. You know, and those emotions, it's just like a roller coaster, as they call it, that fertility roller coaster. Are we going this week? No, we're not. We've got to wait. You know, it was backwards and forth. When you were struggling in those dark times, how did you cope with it?
Not very well.
Yeah, but in terms of what got you out of the hole?
I was in a similar hole back in 2003 when my father passed away. There you go. And I was able to turn it around then. I had a really dark point where I was just like, look, I had the darkest point of my life. My father had just passed away. If we're going to go the whole story, I found myself in my pants, in my lounge, just drinking, you know, drinking bottle after bottle after bottle. And I was like, this is not good, Tone. Okay, this is not you. You need to turn your life around because it's going to go really wrong if you don't. And I'd done what they did in the film. So I went and poured down all the alcohol in the sink. And I was like, look, need to get out of it. And that was kind of the same thing that happened in 2017. At that low point, you know, I was suicidal. I didn't want to be here. You know, I felt that my wife deserved more. She deserved to be with somebody that give her a child. And, you know, I said all the stuff to her. I was like, look, just leave me, go off with somebody. You know, it's what you deserve. And then I just kind of thought to myself, I thought, well, hold on, I deserve that as well. You know, I deserve to be a father. You know, it's what I've always wanted. So I thought to myself, well, look, you know, as you guys have rightly done, you know, I'll try and help other people that are going through the same thing. And I'd never created a website. I'd never done Instagram at the time and all that sort of stuff. And I anonymously kind of started just blogging my story down. And I thought, you know what, if I can help one other person not go through what I'm going through, that will help me. And I started getting messages from other guys going through the same thing. And I was like, hold on. There are other people out here going through this thing and talking about this is helping me, so it must be helping them. And it was just, it was that kind of light bulb moment, but just thinking, geez, you know, I can get through this and I can help other people get through this just by doing something which I love, which is talking. So that was, that helped me through it. That helped me in that dark space. It may not be kind of how we wanted the answer around there, but that's, yeah, it was just helping other people help me. That was my therapy, to talk to other people about it.
That was perfect, mate. You've just explained exactly how you felt, what you're experiencing, which is a tough thing to open up about, especially to the public. You know, talking to your wife can be challenging enough, and the ones closest to you, but actually putting it out there, it's brave work, buddy. And I know that what you did helped a lot of people. So I know personally, I'll thank you for that. It was an amazing thing you did when it was hard for you to do that. Whereabouts did the infertility group come in for it? Because that's where we met.
Christ, that was probably about 2019, wasn't it? I think we had been a couple of the talks on there. I lose track of time now. It was pre-COVID, I'm sure of it, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was. It must have been 2020.
Was it?
Because, and I know it was that because, oh no, maybe it was late 2019 because Jen, we were pregnant with Enya. Yeah. No, it would have been 2020 because she was born in October. So yeah, it would have been early 2020. Oh, it was, yeah. And then that was kind of where we got this, this idea came up about doing this, this trek.
Yeah.
And before I knew it, I'd signed up. But that's how we met, wasn't it? That trip to Nepal with the Everest Base Camp. And for me personally, I've talked about it on this podcast before, how much of a life-changing experience that was for me. And I think one of the main things was I got to meet like you and I got to meet Aaron, people that had been through it actually in the flesh and experienced another hard, challenging journey with them. And Ian, obviously, because Ian was there.
Don't forget little Ian.
without Ian, it wouldn't have happened. Like the guy who worked so hard for that to happen, and after all of it, he got me as a roommate. So
I think it was otherwise you or if Aaron will tell you, I repacked my bag about 20 times an evening, and he rips me about it all the time. It's like you've got to make sure you got this, mate. You know, you've got to make sure.
You were always late for dinner, and it was just like he's packing his bag, isn't he?
Yeah.
I've never met someone that can pack a bag so many times in pretty much the same order. Right.
Just to make sure. I think the lovely thing about Everest trip was with us four, we were all at completely different stages.
Hmm.
And I think that's why we kind of complemented each other so well.
Yeah.
That there was the complete range of the journey. And, you know, probably why we all gelled so much, because we could just talk about it, share stories and chew the fat about anything and everything related to it. It was lovely. It was so nice.
Yeah, it's definitely...
I'd do it again in a heartbeat, honestly, I would.
It was definitely an experience or a situation where we could all speak about something related differently, if that makes sense. So, yeah, the fertility spectrum was definitely covered. I'd do it again. It was amazing. It was bloody cold, though. Like, it was really cold on some of those mornings, but it was phenomenal. And you know, it was for a good cause. And you know, once again, I know that a lot of people got a lot out of it. Not just us, you know.
Yeah.
So, what? How did the missus find the situation? Did she get more support or?
She's a relatively private woman, shall we say. She doesn't do social media at all. She probably won't listen to this. Just because she doesn't do Facebook, Instagram and any of that sort of stuff. I did suggest to her, like, try and get some support, but she's just, you know, she's a very strong woman, a very strong-minded woman. But she was offered more than I was. Even though she sort of like said it's fine, but that was through things that I'd found for her, if that makes sense. Because I knew how much kind of the Instagram community, should I say, was helping me through everything. So I ended up setting her up an account. I was like, look, you need to follow all these people. But there's just so many people out there for women, and there just wasn't for the guys. And even if you look at it now, there's still a massive, I wouldn't say disconnect, but it's in proportionate from men to women. It's getting better. And through, you know, you guys talking about it, everybody else talking about it. So he's getting better. I just think there is so much more out there for the women. And I get it, but we just need to change it a little bit and just keep talking about it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, we're not going anywhere, and like, I can say the same for every bloke who I know that's talking, including yourself. Like, are so driven to make that change, and that's what we need is that that community to grow. Like, we've laid the seed, the foundation. It's like, you know, the important thing is now is just continuing that and keeping on, keep banging that drum, keep climbing Everest or whatever. However it comes, really, it doesn't have to be putting yourself all out there with your face and stuff. It's just the conversation to keep going. It's more awareness, it's more respect, more compassion for everyone, and it helps change the landscape. And that implies even people who aren't going through it. And that's probably the most important thing, is because then that makes people feel more comfortable to come forward when they are and not feel alone. Like we've all felt, you know, what you said earlier really deeply resonated about that kind of hitting that bottom and just feeling like, who am I? Where do I go? And when you said about saying to your wife, like, go find someone else, someone who can give you what you want. All three of us have said that to our other halves. And I bet.
Yeah.
The majority of men who have found themselves in the situation have said the similar, same or similar as well.
Yeah.
It's amazing, really. Like, I still, you know, we've had conversations with people recently where it's come up in the conversation that this was the same situation was happening 40 years ago. Mm. And it's like, we haven't moved on. And like you've said, Tony, there are people, individuals, kind of talking out now, but so much more needs to be done. And I find it
stupid that, I mean, for me, you know, I did all of that anonymous podcast and the Instagram stuff before I'd even told my best friend, you know. So I was out there putting this out there, trying to help other people before I'd kind of really helped myself. Do you know what I mean? Well, after I did tell my best friend, obviously he was like, really? You know, mate, you know, I'm your best friend. I've known you for like 25 years. What the hell? You could have come to me. And I was like, yeah, I know. I realize I should have done now. But it was that thing of helping other people, but not kind of thinking about yourself. Mm. And that's, I think that's kind of the mindset of maybe a few people. You just got to think, no, you actually need to stop and help yourself as well.
I think that would have been helping you doing what you were doing, getting out, airing it in some way. Yeah. Of course, would have been, because you're not internalizing it constantly in your mind. You, by typing it, writing it, whatever, getting it out of your mind is really important, because you start to make sense of it more yourself when you're seeing those words looking back at you. It does, and quite often with some, like with certain thoughts, feelings, you, when you're seeing it looking back at you, you kind of realize how irrational some of them are as well.
Mm.
And especially around that whole kind of identity piece of who am I as a man, and what does it make me as a man? And I think that's the kind of precursor to saying to wives, partners, girlfriends, whoever, go find someone else find a man who can give you what it is that you want. And that does all come from that attack on masculinity of thinking, well, 100%. What am I? Because I can't give you a baby. Well, actually, it's all of that strength to get yourself out of that hole. That's what makes you a man, and a stronger man than so many people out there walking the streets every day who think they're the man, who are anything but.
Yeah, I think that during my early stages of helping people, I was definitely, it was a part of self-control, like helping myself. It was a bit of self-therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But as I kind of went through that process and became more confident in my identity and who I was, it became less about me, even though that was unconscious, and it became more about others. And I'm definitely in a place now where I'm comfortable with what I've been told and what I know about myself. And that's why I want to help other people. Like, as you said, Tony, it's, I don't want anyone else to feel like I felt, like the fact of, you know, life wasn't worth living. Like, of course it is. You've just found out a bit more information about yourself that you need to learn and process. But the support is missing massively for the men. Definitely. And that's what this podcast is all about. Just keep talking. That's all we hope, you know. We hope that someone picks this up and go, oh, there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Even though it can seem so dark and difficult to get there.
Tony,
I just want to go back to, you mentioned it to your friend. Firstly, you know, I understand where he's coming from, of like, what are you doing? I could have helped you. But it's the complex nature of male infertility is that you don't know that. You feel that it is, and quite rightfully, a massive leap of faith in sharing. But one thing that Kieran and I both heavily advocate for is sharing with your friends and giving them that chance to be that friend. So just want to touch upon that, like when you did share with him and did open up, how did that make things between you, and how did he receive that?
I mean, obviously, he was just like, you know, why have you been so silly? Why didn't you come and tell me? And I think it was that kind of like, because you feel less of a man because of, you know, what was the matter? I wasn't fearful that, you know, it'd be negative about it. It was just that kind of leap of faith, sort of saying, mate, I really need some help here, please. And he was lovely about it, you know. Afterwards, he was just, oh, you shouldn't be so silly, you should have told me. But, you know, it was just that shoulder to cry on, because it did, just stood there and had a massive, like, proper hug. And since then, he's been absolutely amazing. You know, I'm not saying he wasn't amazing before, he was, but do you know what I mean? He's always been there for me, and he always will be.
It levels up.
It was just me getting it out. Yeah.
That's what I found. Yeah. It pushed us all, it made us all more open with each other, me and my lad mates, and leveled us up. Made us more mature.
You know, he's my best mate, he always will be. God bless him. So, yeah, but it was just difficult, because it was that point where I think what kicked it in was I ended up doing a newspaper article, and suddenly my picture was in the bloody newspaper. And I was like, I can't hide anymore. I needed to tell people. I had customers coming in into my office that morning, picking up the newspaper, and I was like, yeah, that's me.
I can sign it for you if you want.
Do you know what I mean? I've actually got a copy right next to me. So that is kind of when I had to tell people. But I decided, when I was offered to do that newspaper piece, that's when I needed to kind of like be open and honest with my family, my friends, because that was still 3 years deep and nobody knew about it. You know, we're kind of lucky, unlucky in a way that most of my friends live 100 miles away. So they kind of didn't know what was going on day to day. You know, we could hide it from them. Weekends and events, it was like, oh, we're not drinking because we've got to drive back to London. Yeah. You know, you're in so many medications and supplements and stuff that you couldn't. So
it was so funny, because it was the same for me. 3 years in, we were interviewed by the BBC about the impact of lockdown on fertility treatment, and I hadn't opened up to anyone at that point. And I decided to, with the camera people, they didn't make it on the news, but I didn't know that. I didn't know what was going to get put out there. So I was like, oh shit, I need to tell everyone, like close, like immediate family members, just phoning everyone that night. It was still in lockdown, and just telling them all. It was cathartic, but it was that push that made me have to do it, because I didn't want them seeing it and hearing it not from myself personally. And everything got easier after that. And
subconsciously, I think it kind of needed that push.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Massively.
It's just like, okay, I'm gonna have to do it.
We're not downplaying how hard it is to open up. Like, that is proof that it was both of us getting to that point of having to. But, you know, and it's one thing now to look back and go, oh, I wish I'd done it sooner. But I wasn't that long ago. I still remember what it was like day to day, and the difficulty in opening up when it's so all consuming. If you know, the key message is here from, and Kieran's talked about in the past when he opened up to one of his mates, is like, we are all saying that things got a lot easier once we started opening up to our close friends. So,
100%.
We cannot stress the importance of that enough when you are in a position to do so, because you do have to look out for yourself first and foremost. Yeah. And if you know that you're not in too much of a vulnerable state to do it, then just take your time, but just know that it is really worthwhile and really powerful doing that.
Yeah, 100%, totally.
Yeah, I think friends can play such an important role in this, such an important role. And I haven't actually talked to Sean about this, but I got a text message from my best mate, basically from uni, a couple of weeks ago, and he said, I'm sorry. I was like, what are you sorry about? He goes, I've just listened to your podcast. He said, I'm sorry I wasn't there for you. And I was like, I didn't tell you.
Mm.
And he was like, yeah, but you felt like that and you didn't turn to me. And we kind of had this real moment, and I had to explain to him how I really felt. And, you know, years down the line, I'm still reflecting on it that actually maybe I didn't always do the right thing in the right situation. He wanted to know. He wanted to be there to support me. So friends are so, so important. And as Sean said it so many times, they level up. Like, it levels up. Like, your real mates are there for you. And in terms of him, he had a lot on his plate, but he was like, I've still got room for you. Why didn't you tell me? He knew we were going through fertility issues and treatment, but he didn't know how I felt, how close to the edge I was. So it's just a case of, you know, dealing with that and being open to your friends and the people that you know are really going to care about you. It's so, so important.
I mean, I had my my probably closest person that followed me all through. It was actually my boss at work, because he was the one that, you know, when we had the call to say that we'd lost our first four embryos, as it were, I was at work, literally went in his office, shut the blinds and broke down and crying, you know. So he had that twice, bless him. And he's very much like my big brother. So, you know, he followed me through the whole thing. As is another old work colleague, because he found me in the office, bawling my eyes out. And they were the two people that kind of knew everything, obviously, apart from my wife. They were the only two people that followed me through the whole of the journey right from the beginning. Unfortunately, one of them moved to Switzerland, who I still keep in contact with, who's lovely. And I still work with my same boss. You know, and he's followed me through the whole thing, bless him. He's been absolutely amazing. You know, with authors, you can understand all the appointments, the clinic visits, the whole thing of going to Spain at the drop of a hat and everything else. You know, they've been absolutely amazing. So I've been really lucky from that point of view.
Wow. Yeah, that's worth its weight in gold when you've got bosses who can give you that time and freedom to do it, because I understand it is, you know, if you, like you said, even the fact that it's going to Spain, but how many other people just see that as like that you're going off on another jolly, like absolute rubbish, like you'd rather be doing anything but you're in that situation, and that having that would have, I'm sure, been such a huge weight lifted off your shoulders.
100%. It's a massive, massive stress off. But yeah, when you're going for EasyJet or Ryanair at 5 o'clock in the morning to get a cheap flight because all your money's going on medication, it's not a pretty trip to Spain, trust me. We're just sitting there freezing. I think one of the flights I did by myself literally was Ryanair Stansted, like 5 o'clock in the morning in, I think it was December or January, that little 2019, 2020 period. It was not a pretty flight. You know, you're taking just hand luggage because you don't want to get paid anymore. I think I was there for two nights by myself. It was a shocker. I'm not a good flyer anyway. That was the only thing. But I'm sitting on the edge of the seat like this on takeoff. Mate, it's not good. It was worse than Lukla, Kieran. That's what it was. It's worse than that, mate. Trust me.
I don't know. That was sketchy as anything. So Sean, Lukla is the air, basically the...
most dangerous land. Airport in the world.
The airport where you land to get to Mount Everest, and the runway is probably like, 150 metres, and it goes uphill, and if you don't stop, you smash into a mountain.
Oh, perfect.
And then on the way... you go off the mountain.
Yeah.
And then on the way down, on the way back, you've got this like hill, and you're looking at it thinking, this isn't long enough to take off on. And they go, and then you just drop off the end a little bit, and then basically you know, the air catches you, but it's not the mate, I nearly shit myself a few times doing it. Was so sketchy, that kind of whole flight.
Wow.
Anyway, that's a different story.
Amazing. Well, but, Tony, like we've talked about so much, like it's absolute, like just fertility gold, you know, for men going through this. It's just, you've said so much stuff that will mean so much to so many. So Tony, you've had a very varied experience from fertility clinics. We talked about that one in London initially, then moving on to the one in Spain. What support or changes would you like to see for men? And whether that is from the clinical space or outside of, with kind of like the community at large, is there anything that you think is a glaring option there?
Can I say decent wank rooms in every IVF clinic? Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Seriously, mate, it's just seriously shocking. A bit of your own personal space that's not like my toilet cubicle from when I was at high school. From a physical perspective, that would be lovely. I think it is just that support, you know, when you go in there. And what I do now, every time I go in one of these, even the clinics, I'll just say to the other guys, it's like, you're all right, mate, how you doing? How you getting on? And it's just having that conversation. And it freaks some blokes out, I'll be honest with you, because they just give you the look. They're like, it's like you're talking to someone on a tube. They think they're going to whatever hit you, I don't know. But they're like, you can't talk in here. How dare you? But just start that conversation with the bloke sitting next to you. You're all there for the same reason, really. You know, your wife's just walked off, doing whatever. Just have a chat. You know, doesn't even need to be about fertility. Just have a chat. You're all there for the same purpose. Even after you've been for 5 minutes and come back again, you know, it's just have a chat. You know,
what, been to the wank room?
Exactly. Yeah. It was your time and everybody thinking, all right, easy. just have a chat. And if I think back to that first clinic that we went to, that was awful because you all sat around the perimeter of the room and it was a big room. Nobody talked to, not even the women talked to each other. And it was just too clinical. You know, if you go into a hospital, you're all there for like different purposes. If you go to a fertility clinic, you're all there for the same purpose. Just look after each other. Talk to each other. That's it. That's all you need to do.
Love
that's,
that.
That's a clinic environment thing though, isn't it? That's you need to make those people feel more relaxed.
Yeah.
Because what you've just described there was my first experience going in, sitting around, everyone could see each other. It was like it was a hospital waiting room and very uncomfortable, you know. The old wanxiety went right up.
But the first place was just, I can see it now, it's just a massive room. You're all sitting around the perimeter. Obviously, if you're there with your partners, you're in your little huddle. You couldn't even talk to like the people kind of next to you because they were sat apart from you. And the other side of the room was miles away, do you know what I mean? And you just didn't. And you just think, people, seriously, talk to each other. That's it.
If any of the clinics are listening out there, it's great advice, isn't it? Well, it generally is. Let's make this more comfortable space for the men and the women. Because it is
You kind of want a concierge to go in there or something and say, right, you know, is everybody okay? Is everybody want anything? Oh, you're here to, you know, just... not liven it up a little bit. That's probably a bit too far, but just jazz hands.
That would be a compare.
Sorry, yes. But you just, you know, just something. I don't know what exactly, but that and wank rooms. Yeah, that's my two biggest things.
Love that.
Sorry.
I'm just trying to hold back all these jokes in my head at them, so I'm just going to move on because everyone knows what I could be like. Anyway, look, we've talked and we've had some great discussions, and in terms of we've covered a lot, haven't we? I just want to thank you for kind of sharing your story. I know that people, guys, are going to listen to this and go, I can relate to that so much. And I think it's definitely worth having you on again at some point and talking more in depth because
I could keep going on about this for hours because it's a subject close to my heart, you know, and considering we're a long way in this already, I was just like, I can't believe we've been talking for this long already. Trust me, it's flown by. It's, you know, two old friends and stuff, but Yeah, I've really loved it. And there is so much to this subject. It just keeps going and going and going, to be honest.
So for our last question, we always ask people the same question, and that is, if you could give one piece of advice to any guy going through facing infertility, what would that piece of advice be?
Can I have two? There's two things that I would say to everybody. We've kind of already done the first one of the whole talking thing, but just get tests done. Don't be afraid of having another test. You know, you need to get tested properly. You need to get a thorough sheet of tests done, and don't be afraid, because that's your starting point. Yeah, it doesn't mean that it's going to be worse and you're going to fail. It's just starting point, and that you can move forwards with, you know, and with the correct support, correct help, you know, you can just keep moving on. And the talking to each other and the tests, I think, is really important. Sorry.
No, don't apologize, awesome. Mate. It's great advice. Perfect advice, you know. How are you supposed to know what you've got to deal with?
And that's the thing, if I've had those tests in day one, you know, we would have been, to be fair, my daughter would have been born probably pre-COVID. That's, you know, that's how many years that could have saved us.
Mm.
You know, she'd have been 7 or 8 by now rather than 11 months. So, you know, that's the massive thing. Get the test done and talk to each other. That's it. That's all you need to do.
Yeah, it's great advice. Thank you.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on, buddy. And as always, you know, you've communicated well and said it as it is. And I know, like I've said it, so many guys are going to gain stuff from this. It was really, truly amazing. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Tony.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favor and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at the Male Fertility Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.